All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. All right, you guys, introducing the great Dan McAdams from the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, and of course, co-host of the Liberty Report with Dr. Paul as well. RonPaulInstitute.org is the web address. How are you, Dan? Welcome back to the show.
I'm great, Scott. Thanks for having me back. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm very happy to have you here and to talk about the Bay of Kooks. That's what I'm calling it.
good stuff.
They had the Bay of Pigs and the Bay of Goats, and this one is the Bay of Losers, I guess. Some former Green Berets, a couple former Green Berets, failed miserably at launching some kind of coup in Venezuela. Can you get us up to speed, Dan?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and it's hard to really get a handle on it. But, you know, the more I sniff, Scott, the more I smell the horrible smell of Mike Pompeo and Elliot Abrams. Mm-hmm. But apparently, this has been in the works for a while. Certainly, Al Jazeera has done some good reporting, and the Washington Post has also published a document suggesting that, there was a contract between this Green Beret, this Goudreau, and Juan Guaido himself to do this overthrow. To me, it sounds kind of half-baked. You know, I don't know. They had we do know there were a bunch of troops that were over the border in Colombia. They've been cooling their heels for a while. If you remember, Scott, maybe I'm not remembering exactly when they went over there, but as I remember, they were actually being badly fed, and they were in pretty bad condition. And apparently they were supposed to be part of this plot. Of course, none of that came off, and ended up being a couple of guys in a fishing boat that were pretty easily caught by the Venezuelan security forces here a few days ago. So it's a very strange situation.
It really does kind of sound like the Bay of Pigs, right, where the plan keeps changing, but they go ahead anyway. And by the time they implement the plan, they've got just one handful of guys and no capability whatsoever.
Yeah, and it also sounds like Elliot Abrams' handiwork. You know, remember him in the 80s. He's the guy behind the Salvadoran death squads. He's the guy behind all these right-wing death squads, the murder of Archbishop Romero and all this. So this is the kind of stuff that he does. It always fails, of course, but it just kind of has that. And also when you add in the idea that there's an increasing sense of desperation among those who are dying for regime change in Venezuela, those in Washington, you start putting two and two together. And people say, well, this looks too stupid to be, something that the U.S. government was involved in. Well, guess what? it wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, no, certainly stupidity is no way to conclude that the U.S. was not involved. I mean, if anything, maybe the size of the mission itself would raise questions about how involved the U.S. was. If they got a green light, you'd like to think that somebody would have thought that they actually had some sort of workable plan here rather than one boat full of kooks who walked right into a trap. But
yeah, but you know how the neocons always oversell things. Remember, it's a cakewalk. Don't worry. Let's go into Iraq. It'll be easy. And they were saying the same things about Venezuela last year in the April attempted coup. Mm-hmm. This is going to be easy. It'll be over in a couple of days. And they always oversell this and say how easy it is. And then, of course, when it goes badly, they say, well, we sure didn't see that coming.
Right.
So that suggested as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly, I mean, they said that all they had to do was for Guaido to declare himself president and the army would defect and the people of Venezuela would rally around him and all of these things. And who knows if they really believed that or that was just what they told the boss and so it ended up becoming the party line they couldn't escape from or what. But, of course, that was nowhere near true, but they went ahead anyway. And so, yeah.
It was
two different failed coups with Guaido last year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The one with the delivery of aid, which is a total setup, and then the one where they sprung Lopez from the slammer, and you know, before he could even get out, he had to hide in another embassy. I forget which one it was. But, you know, the thing is, if this was the case and they really did believe this would be successful, you have to question, you know, our intelligence analysts, our intelligence resources. We do spend a couple of bucks a year on the CIA and all these intelligence agencies. Are there some good analysts there somewhere who knew all along this was a total nightmare? Or is this kind of circular thinking par for the course, in which case we're not getting very much for our money?
Yeah. Well, yeah, certainly. Well, in any case, we aren't. But yeah, you're right about the stupidity there. And, you know, the unreality that these people cling to. I mean, if you go back to the failed coup of a year ago, where I guess the first one, where they had the clip of the armored personnel carrier running over a guy. I think he didn't even die. And they just played that one clip a million times on every channel. Like, who would have thought out of ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox, there's one pool camera for the entire country of Venezuela, the entire city of Caracas, and all they can show us is this one 10-second clip of, and the guys in the armored personnel carrier, they're cops, not soldiers, and the protesters are throwing Molotov cocktails at them, so it's sort of a fair fight in a way. But anyway, then you had to go to Twitter to see the drone footage of the hundreds of thousands of people who turned out, the revolution turned out to surround the presidential palace facing out to defend this, you know, horrible socialist president who, you know, with the oil glut, just resorted to the printing press and has completely destroyed the economy of the country. Hey, at least he's not a foreign American sock puppet like Guaido. And so the revolution showed up to side with the president to protect Venezuelan independence, which makes perfect sense. You know, right-wingers would rally to protect Barack Obama if it was against a foreign-backed coup, right? Liberals would support Donald Trump if it was Hillary teaming up with the Chinese against him or something, wouldn't they? Probably.
Yeah, I hope. It's just human nature. I mean, we don't have to be brilliant intelligence analysts to understand how people behave when they feel that their country's under threat. And that's, I mean, it's so obvious, you almost wonder if that, you know, by design. I mean, my first thought when I read about this bungled coup this time was, I mean, that sounds like something Maduro would cook up, except I don't think he's smart enough. But if the only person who benefits from this is Maduro,
right?
He looks like a guy who's, he's supposed to be destabilized now. He's supposed to be hiding in a bunker right now. And here he's got this crack team of people who are protecting the Venezuelans from the evil Yankees. He looks great.
So, right.
My first thought was maybe he launched it.
Yeah, hey, that's a great point. You know, when there was that drone attack against him, that was the CIA and the Washington Post line then, was he probably arranged this himself just to look like a victim. Because they at least understand that, yeah, the more he looks like a victim of foreign power, the more support that he has inside the country. The Americans even have a term for it, the rally around the flag effect.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a study where they coined that term or where that comes from exactly, but that's what they refer to it as.
And it's not unprecedented, you know, toward the later years of Shevardnadze in Georgia, when he had become more and more tyrannical, it was pretty common that he would stage an assassination attempt every few months and get away with it. And so he could basically go ahead and take his political, and, you know, as they say in Casablanca, round up the usual suspects, you know. So it's not unprecedented to do something like this.
Yep. And of course, you know, whoever's behind this plot, although, yeah, I think it probably looks more like Pompeo than Maduro in this case, or the same thing for the drone. It works either way, you know, and it's just like Randolph Bourne said, war is the health of the state, unless you lose, in which case, yeah, no. But otherwise, you know, of course, people are going to side with their leader. I was just talking with an expert on Yemen about how people who are not at all Zaydi Shia support the Houthis. Why? Because they're the government of the country while it's being bombed by foreign powers. And so they rally around the flag as well they should, or as at least as well they should be expected to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, where it gets dangerous, and my old go-to is antiwar.com, of course. They've got a great piece from Jason today about Pompeo vowing he will use every tool to rescue Americans from the failed Venezuela attack. And that's where it gets dangerous, because the neocons are going to use their own failures, if they're indeed behind this, which I suspect they are. Mm-hmm. They're going to use their massive failure. These two guys that are out there, they're basically, you know, they're basically a trap. You know, they're a tripwire or what have you. And so now Pompeo's going to do his own rally around the flag. We got to save our guys. These are brave special forces guys. We got to do something. So in a way, they're trying to make lemonade out of the lemons that they've given us.
Yeah. When it's so obvious that they could just negotiate to get them back, you know, with not too much trouble. It's not like Maduro's going to get all brave and start torturing these guys and disappear them off into some dungeon or whatever. He's not that stupid, and that's not how the dynamics of this situation are set up at all for him to have to fool in that way.
I mean, I'm no master diplomat, but I could put out the deal very easily. Look, we'll give you these two guys back. Don't do anything when we arrest Guaido and the people that he plotted with, because his name, he signed the thing, his name's on the check. Let us take care of this guy. The U.S. is not super thrilled with Guaido anyway. The guy's a total loser, and so basically it's a win-win for everyone. They could probably get that done in an afternoon, you know. So Pompeo, don't thank me, but just do it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And you know what? You should thank Dan McAdams. He deserves credit for coming up with that great plan. And it, and of course, as you said, the guy is a total loser. And I'd like to give you a chance to discuss that a little bit further, because, you know, there are people who, and it's understandable, it's not completely reasonable, but it's understandable that people just look at the left-wing economics of this government and how low Venezuela's been brought. And, you know, people in the libertarian movement, especially in the Libertarian Party, and a lot of right-wingers who, you know, really are more paleo types and certainly should know better. Boy, when it comes to a coup against Maduro, all of a sudden, it's the left that's the enemy, not the American state, but the left in the world. And so if it's a right-wing coup, maybe it's something we should support.
And yeah, and meanwhile, the socialism in the U.S. has gone through the roof. You know, we've got a president, and we've got a House of Representatives who make Maduro look like Ludwig von Mises. You know, I mean, he's Maduro's not printing up, you know, $6 trillion to hand out to their cronies like Trump and Pelosi are doing. So you know, it's always easier to see. You know, the splinter in someone else's eye, I guess, is the biblical reference. Mm-hmm. And that's the case here. But it is. It's like a dog whistle to a lot of libertarians. Does that mean that Scott Horton and Daniel McAdams love socialism? No, not at all. But, you know, really true, lasting, sustained change is always evolutionary. Very seldom the revolutions, there are a few exceptions, but very seldom the revolutions end in a situation where the people are better off than the status quo ante. That's just a fact.
Yep. Especially when we're giving them the excuse, just like in Iran, to say that all opposition is backed by the CIA and therefore completely discredited and irrelevant, which is a great propaganda line. If you're the Ayatollah or you're Maduro, to say that everybody loves me except the CIA sock puppets. Everyone knows that, you know.
Yeah. And that was the case. You know, I was in Cuba a while ago when I was working for Dr. Paul, and that's what everyone said. Every one of the government officials, hey, don't blame us. If it wasn't for this embargo, we'd be a paradise now. Mm-hmm. So they never take any of the blame for it. And the best strategy with Maduro and Venezuela would be the opposite of what we're doing, which is to completely and totally open up, show them the benefit. Oh, yeah, but there might be some corruption. Oh, well, thank God we don't have any of that here in the U.S., right?
Right.
Completely open up and show them by example. Yeah, it may not be a libertarian paradise, but neither is the U.S. They would be better off if we reached out in friendship rather than with a fist, you know?
Yep.
Hey, guys, just real quick. If you listen to the interviews only feed at the Institute or at scotthorton.org, I just want to make sure you know that I do a Q&A show from time to time at scotthorton.org/show, the old whole show feed. And so if you like that kind of thing, check that out there. Hey, guys, here's how to support this show. You can donate in various amounts at scotthorton.org/donate. We've got some great kickbacks for you there. Shop amazon.com by way of my link at scotthorton.org. Leave a good review for the show at iTunes and Stitcher. Tell a friend, I don't know. Oh yeah, and buy my books, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and The Great Ron Paul, The Scott Horton Show Interviews 2004 through 2019. And thanks. Hey guys, check out Listen and Think audiobooks. They're at listenandthink.com and of course on audible.com. And they feature my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, as well as brand new out Inside Syria by our friend Reese Ehrlich, and a lot of other great books, mostly by libertarians there. Reese might be one exception, but essentially they're all libertarian audiobooks. And here's how you can get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks. Just donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate.
All right, so, but tell us about Guaido, this guy, this loser, as you call him, this, what do they call it, acting president, even though he's not acting like one?
Yeah, I mean, he's picked out of a lineup by Mike Pence, you know, no doubt with neocons whispering in his ear. You know, Mike called him up one day and said, hey, if you declare yourself president, we're going to recognize you. And of course he did. But talk about how many millions of dollars have gone through him and his political parties and his cronies. Nothing to show for it. There were several stories about how a lot of this money was wasted. I think he had some delegation, was it in Colombia maybe, that they spent a couple $100,000 on prostitutes and drugs over a weekend. So there's a lot of this corruption going on. Even the coup that he tried to start with Lopez never went anywhere. And even the U.S., if you remember a couple of weeks ago, they're trying to launch something where they'll bring in some opposition that's not Guaido and try to have a roundtable thing there. So even the U.S. neocons, I think, have to a degree given up on Guaido. It's just a non-starter. The guy's, you know, he just doesn't have it in him. And he's just not popular. You know, you can't have a coup when you're just not popular. So where it goes, I mean, and that actually would bring up another thing if you're conspiratorial. Maybe the U.S. did do this, did have Guaido sign on, because they got to get rid of this loser. And now there's every excuse in the world for Maduro to arrest him. I mean, it's out there in the open. So maybe that's what it's really all about.
Yeah, well, which sure is sacrificing him the hard way, but I guess it doesn't cost them anything, so.
Well, ask Noriega about what happens when you're on the CIA payroll and they get ticked off at you.
Right. Boy, they're fickle, Hussein. Those CIA guys. Aren't they?
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
And, you know, here's the thing about Guaido, too. And, you know, I can't imagine that this is any different in Venezuela than it would be in the United States. But he has quite literally and specifically and explicitly called for American military intervention in Venezuela to put him in power, which is the most treasonous treason that you could possibly come up with. What must be the opinion of the average Venezuelan about a guy like that?
Yeah, I can't even, like you said earlier, you suggested earlier, I can't imagine even the most vehement anti-Trumper getting any kind of traction by saying something like that. Hey, Chinese, please come in and take out this guy. It's so anathema to normal people that I just can't imagine how that could be popular.
Yep. And occasionally you do see a liberal pundit type say it's time for a military coup d'etat here. And they get shouted down even by center left liberal Democrat types, you know, won't put up with that. But add on top of that, a foreign military ought to go ahead and get rid of Trump for us. Yeah, right. You can find one person in 100 million in this country who would support that under any circumstances.
And so, I think that's par for the course anywhere else. Absolutely.
Yep. And how could he be so stupid as to publicly say that that's what he wants to see? Does he think the Venezuelans don't speak English at all? That those quotations are not going to make it back home again in the age of the internet? You know, it's nuts.
Yeah. Well, it may be his CIA paymasters are, you know, putting the words into his mouth. And once he's on the gravy train, you know, who wants to go back to obscurity when all this money's running through you? So who knows what kind of constraints he's on. I mean, the CIA, they're not a bunch of schoolboys. You know, they demand something for their money as well.
Yeah. Well, and so again, too, if this wasn't all, you know, the vested interests of the Americans and their cronies in Venezuela, but they wanted what they claimed to want, which is the best for the people there, then, you know, refusing to intervene and instead just lecturing them, you know, no sanctions, but just telling them, see how it doesn't work when you do it your way, would be so much more effective. And especially with the absolute collapse of the price of oil right now, they're going to have to figure out something to diversify their economy they're not going to be able to carry on like Hugo Chavez did at the height of the fuel bubble of the George W. Bush era back then. Those days are over. They're going to have to figure out something else. And if it was just the Americans dispensing advice and not being the world's worst hypocrites about it, then they'd probably be a lot closer to abandoning their inflationist policies and, you know, figuring out a different way to approach it. You know, it wouldn't have to be a complete laissez-faire, but they couldn't possibly carry on the way they are now. And yet, again, all our intervention against them only solidifies the problem, which is a very serious problem, right? I mean, the government has essentially destroyed the currency there, and millions of people have fled. I don't know exactly how many, but at least 1 million people have left the country over the last few years over it.
Yeah, but, you know, here's what shows that, you know, why the neocons are among, I think, the most evil people on Earth, is they view this as a good thing. Just like they view when the Iranians were suffering from the COVID-19 in far disproportionate numbers than a lot of other countries, you know, the Pompeo out and out said this is great. They're being brought to their knees. They view the suffering of average people, and no matter what you think about Venezuela, some average guy just trying to make a living, he's not to blame for any of this. But anyone who looks at that and rubs their hands with glee is just kind of a special kind of evil, I think.
Yep. Well, and they're not ignorant of it either. I mean, Mike Pompeo in specific had cited the beaching of a boat in Japan, a North Korean fishing boat with a dead man on board, and said, aha, see, the sanctions are working.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Citing specifically some poor dead peasant and saying, this is a measure of the success of our policy here. So yeah, it's not like they're ignoring that and pretending that only the ruling elite are the ones suffering or some kind. Well, they're very targeted sanctions. Yeah, they're targeted against the very poorest, most desperate people in Korea, in Venezuela, in Iran, and you name it.
People who are starving, and from the looks of Mike, he's not doing a lot of starving lately. So it's very evil, very evil stuff. And you know, I we've been disappointed for a long time. Trump's rhetoric has not matched his actions, but you know, I still have to hold out some hope, otherwise I become suicidal. But I do hope that maybe this will be the breaking straw, where, you know, the last straw, where Trump finally gets rid of Pompeo and brings in someone who's decent, may not exactly be our kind of guy, but who's a little bit better than these guys. And I guess I just have to cross my fingers.
I mean, after all, Pompeo can't blame this one on Bolton.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. So. But there are some realists that you and I both know who are prominent enough. And as I say, they wouldn't be perfect non-interventionists, but at least they would be bring us toward the right direction.
Yeah. You know, someone should, I guess they wouldn't allow this, but somebody should do some skywriting. Like, hey, Trump, go to nationalinterest.org.
Exactly. Right,
like, they're not that radical there, but you can find Paul Pillar and, Doug Bondo and a few other great, you know, writers there. Yeah. Good enough guys for him to read. And
absolutely. Which,
by the way, I brought it up, so I have to bring it up, that Doug is writing for us at antiwar.com again.
Oh, that's great. That's which, great news.
Yeah, we're really happy about that. And his most recent one is about Afghanistan and is really something else too. So,
oh, great. Really, yeah, I've liked that. Doug and Ted Carpenter for the longest time. I have a lot of respect for those two guys.
Yeah, they are definitely the best we got. And yet, you know, it really is as simple as, you know, Trump probably doesn't even know that there's one good handful of guys that he could hire. Obviously, Rand for Secretary of State would be the big step to make. But then there are plenty of guys over there at the National Interest and at the American Conservative and a couple other places who, and at Cato, who have the credentials, who could be his national security staff and his, secretaries and his foreign policy departments and do just fine. You know, Paul Pillar for National Intelligence Director and Doug McGregor for National Security Advisor and just a couple others like that, we'd be set.
Yeah, we'd certainly be going in a better direction, in a more, to use his term, America first direction.
Yeah. So, but what would Sheldon Adelson say?
Yeah, we can't hold our breath because it's, I don't know. I mean, we get a lot of criticism for being too soft on Trump, but the thing is, if you give up all hope, then why don't we just fold up the tent and go home, you know? I mean, we have to keep trying and keep pushing.
Well, and you know, I mean, he seems to want to get the troops out of Afghanistan, and there's even quotes, and I'm not putting too much stock in this, but there's some quotes of him saying really he wants it done by the election, never mind by next May, like in the deal. Yeah. He wants out by the election. And, you know, that's a huge opportunity for the American people to chime in and say, yeah, you know what? That's what we want, too. And if you want to be reelected, don't be afraid of the hawks saying that they're going to blame you for losing. Know that the American people will cheer that you're finally, you know, stopping wasting all these lives and all this money on this no-win war. And then with the positive reinforcement and all that, he might figure out, he could conceivably figure out that, wow, he's got a lot of wars to end. He could just start ending wars every couple of months and be Donald Trump the Great in the space of a year, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that's how he won the first time. I mean, he was, I couldn't believe some of the stuff he said. It was really good, you know, about.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it either, but it was nice.
Yeah, it was nice. Well, we can hope.
Yeah. Well, and he really is smart enough to take both sides of every issue, and that includes foreign policy. But he'll say on one day that, yes, we're going to have to make some Social Security reforms because we just can't afford this. And then the next day come out and be like, I will protect Social Security forever, no matter what. And you know what I mean? He's like that on every issue. So on foreign policy, he knows that we're all so divided between hawks and doves that he can say just enough to please everybody. And, you know, where it really counts is Israeli policy, and that includes America's position toward Iran. But, you know, and I guess the military is itself, and the arms industries have a lot of interest in picking a fight with Russia and China. But it seems like, by and large, that's not where the votes are. You know, in terms of Israel, yeah, it is, because all of that money, you know, for the party, for the congressional elections and all that kind of stuff. But on the rest of it, especially after the virus and all of this, I don't know, man. It's and you know what? Partially just because it's an election year and it's a round number year, 2020, a full two solid decades into the new century and all these things. I think it really does. At least there's a possibility here for the creation and the pushing of a real spirit that the era of the Bush and Obama wars must come to an end now. We can't afford it. We don't want it. All we want to hear from this president is that he agrees and is really going to follow through and end this stuff. And it's probably the best chance we've had in a long time.
Yeah, refocus on defending this country. You won't have to sound weak. You can sound actually even stronger.
Yep.
We're going to redouble our efforts to defend our country, but we just can't afford to defend other countries. Simple. Yep.
You know, I had this whole idea for what to say in my big debate with Bill Kristol that's now been postponed till July or some other time. I don't really know. But it's a whole new and different argument now. I was going to say all this really smart stuff, you know, but now it seems more like who could argue after this coronavirus crisis here that, yeah, what we should have been doing the last 20 years was screwing around in these stupid wars in the Middle East, you know, for Bill Kristol's vanity or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly. Who can argue that? That's true. Perfect.
Yeah, perfect. Right. It's just the burden of proof is on him to such a degree now. Like, what argument do I even need to make? You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. Hope you get the chance to do that because we're all going to be watching with popcorn.
Yeah. I know. I hope I do, too. I'm betting that it's going to happen within the next 2 or 3 months.
But that'd be great.
Let's see. All right, man. Well, so any other wars we need to make sure and mention today before I let you go, Dan?
Well, this is another whole topic, but I'm very concerned about the rhetoric on China. You know, it worries me a lot. We're looking for a scapegoat, and you know, the Chinese aren't—they're not going to sit back and listen to themselves being blamed for this virus. You know, And so that's what worries me the most, is this potential war with China.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because it's one of those things where we don't really have anything to fight about. We kind of got to make something. I mean, the status quo in Hong Kong changing a little bit, that's no casus belli. It doesn't look like they're about to attack Taiwan, which we don't really have a war guarantee to Taiwan, just sort of a half a one as it exists right now. So we'd have to kind of be sure to pick a fight with them to get one. And yet, you know, it kind of makes it more difficult, right? When the excuse for war is so thin, it sort of, in a perverse way, it makes the government that much more married to their narrative about how necessary it is. And, you know, that less capable of backing down. Sort of like, you know, so damn insane Saddam Hussein. He's just too crazy and too Hitlerian to ever talk to again. And so once they lay down that marker, now we can never talk to him again. Jeez, he's Hitler, huh? You know, that kind of deal. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I think, and there are plenty of vested interests, especially in the Navy and in the Marine Corps, who seem to be, you know, quite interested in figuring out a way to fight them somewhere, somehow.
That's the case. And there are a lot of people who won't be doing the fighting that are behind desks in Washington think tanks that are, you know, looking to pad and feather their nest, calling for war. So, yeah.
You know, it's funny, man. It makes sense to me that these guys, you know, some of them in the Air Force or whichever, would have their interest in picking a fight with Iran, because then they get to demonstrate their capabilities and this and that and the other thing. And after all, full-scale air war against Iran, the USA eventually would decimate them, right, even without nukes. But you can't fight China, Dan. They got H-bombs, and that's the end of the argument, and yet that doesn't seem to be the end of the argument. Mutually assured destruction is canceled based on what? Like, we just squeeze our eyes closed real tight and pretend that we don't know that the Chinese have H-bombs that they can reach out and touch us with?
And the fact of the matter is the Chinese are extraordinarily cautious people, you know, and I did China policy for a long time with Dr. Paul, and you know, the idea that they're going to wake up one morning and say, hey, let's mess up the U.S. and give them a virus, it just doesn't go with the way they think. So this is all manufactured, unfortunately.
Yeah, and of course, look at the hit that they've taken with this stupid virus breaking out there. I mean, it's the worst thing that's happened to them since Mao.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's in it for them?
Yeah, definitely nothing. No. And in terms of public relations, I mean, this is going to cost them trillions into the, you know, decades into the future, the repercussions from this thing. So, yeah, the idea that they had done this to anyone deliberately is completely nuts. But you're right, though, that for the Hawks, hey, it's just an excuse to pick a fight. They don't have to believe it, you know?
Yeah, they don't have to. So it's disturbing to see people who are otherwise doing great work, like Tucker Carlson, falling for this. You know, he's got a lot of power in his position, and it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the same thing with the whole, pretension of the war on terrorism, too, and this clash of civilizations with Islam. I mean, you're talking about a sixth of the population of the planet. Same thing with China. Like, you know what? One way or the other, the Earth has to be big enough for the both of us, for the all of us. And we got to figure this out. America and, you know, our civilization and Chinese civilization have to live as neighbors from now on forever. We can never fight them ever without losing, you know, our entire civilization. Not just our lives, but everything that we've worked for centuries to build would be gone in an instant if we fought a real war with China. So that's it. We're just going to have to figure it out some other way.
Figure it out. Yeah. And the silver lining of this coronavirus business, maybe, and I was on a panel discussion with George Samueli a couple of days ago, is, you know, maybe the U.S. will start rethinking its national religion, which is American exceptionalism. If we don't lead, the world will fall apart, because we have not led on this crisis. And, you know, people are countries are going along in their own pace. So if it destroys this national religion of ours, then it'll be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it's only so obvious, right? The counterfactuals are just right there for anyone's imagination to pick up on. If you just drop the fear for a minute and just think about America, you know, trying to live the Americans in their society, trying to live as a limited constitutional republic instead of this world empire, like, you know, under the excuse we're protecting the world from the Soviet Union that ceased to exist 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And all of this stuff, how much better things could be, you know, if all that money that we've spent on the war on terrorism over the last 20 years, if that had just been invested in goods and services in the United States, you know, throughout the rest of the world, just how much better things would be right now than they are. I mean, it's essentially inescapable. And then, and when you read the Hawks and all their excuses to fight, man, they're getting thin, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But we've got a big job ahead of us trying to convince Americans to not be afraid.
Yeah. So. Well, and especially now. But then again, you know, their vision has, if anything, has become that much more narrow in terms, or their sight, you know, in terms of what's really important. And that cuts both ways. You know, it makes it easier to ignore what's going on overseas. But at the same time, it really does kind of bring home that, wow, we have how many troops in how many bases in how many countries around the world, when everything here is falling apart and all that money is being wasted. Not that we want troops to hold things together here, but just all that money being wasted, all that manpower being wasted, and the position of our country and our reputation around the world, our relationship with the rest of mankind being put into such, you know, perverse straits where it doesn't need to be this way at all. It should be so obvious. But yeah.
And hopefully people will start thinking that way, you know, because that'll be the beginning of a real revolution.
Yeah. So. And, you know, so, hey, call out to all Ron Paul Institute and Libertarian Institute and antiwar.com fans. Everybody write. Everybody do a podcast. Everybody, you know, I don't know, call a congressman staffer and have a good long talk with them. Everybody do a little something to help to push this narrative that even if it's not CNN's choice of important topic for this news cycle, the American people want to see the wars ended now. I think we can do that.
Absolutely. That's a great parting message.
Yeah, man. All right, you guys, that is Dan McAdams, partner with the great Ron Paul down there at the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. And they host the Liberty Report every day. Well, 4 days a week, Chris Rossini on Fridays. And you can find that at RonPaulLibertyReport.com. And of course, the Ron Paul Institute is at RonPaulInstitute.org. Thanks so much again, Dan.
Thank you, Scott.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM. In LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.